Hey, remember when AMC aired black and white movies? Let's talk about it on Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
I'm Joe Lee with pop culture ambassador Bob Thompson, director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Cable TV channel AMC once devoted itself to pre-1950s classic movies where viewers could get a daily dose of Cary Grant, William Powell, or Alfred Hitchcock movies. But the network developed into a major TV content producer when it introduced us to Don Draper.
You're happy with 50%. You're on top and you don't have enough. You're happy because you're successful for now. But what is happiness? It's a moment before you need more happiness. I won't settle for 50% of anything. I want 100%. You're happy with your agency? You're not happy with anything. You don't want most of it. You want all of it. And I won't stop until you get all of it.
That's character Don Draper from AMC's wildly successful hit Mad Men. I mentioned Mad Men, Bob, but prior to producing original content, AMC began to challenge its classic movie content strategy by offering movies from all eras and shortening the name from American Movie Classic, doing a sort of rebranding to just AMC, getting things set, I guess, to move into a different direction and getting away from the classic movie thing.
I have got a rocky relationship with this channel. When it was playing those old black and white movies without commercials, not cut, not colorized, the way they were made, I absolutely loved that channel. And then they started playing movies that they could no longer call it American Movie Classics, because by nobody's definition were they classics. And they were interrupted by advertising. They were bleeping language. They were cutting content. And that, to me, was a really dark period. But in that period, they started these little movements into original programming. One called Remember When, W-E-E-N, and that was the call letters of a radio station in Pittsburgh. And this starts in 1996, brand new, newly scripted, 30-minute series. They did four seasons, 56 episodes. Now, that doesn't seem like that long ago, but that's 3 years before The Sopranos, which really kind of starts the cable explosion of original stuff. And they quietly were doing this, and it had guests on it like Jason Alexander, Patti LuPone, Molly Ringwald, Mickey Rooney. You know, that episode had to be good. J.K. Simmons. It was a hip little show about a 30s and into the 40s radio station. Created, by the way, weird bit of trivia. You remember the Pina Colada song?
Yeah.
Rupert Holmes sung that. He also created Remember When.
Oh, wow.
He also writes novels. Quite a character. Then they kept with this historical thing, maybe to go along with the black and white movies that they used to show, with a show called The Lot, which took place in a 30s Hollywood studio. That goes 99 to 01, and then they kind of move away from their original scripted stuff until Mad Men comes out in 07. So we have the great AMC doing those uncut movies. We then have the ones with the commercials, not such great movies, but their entry into original programming. And then phase three, of course, Mad Men, which is followed then by Breaking Bad. Who would have thought you could top Mad Men? They did it the next year.
And even in that sort of phase two, as you describe, with Remember When and the other show, and even Mad Men, they still sort of stuck with this, let's do something in a period. And so it wasn't doing modern-day productions. Those were the Remember When was 1930s radio. Mad Men is, what, 1960s, early 70s. And so they were still saying, okay, we're American Movie Classics, we're AMC, we're producing these things, but in these periods. And then you begin to move into these productions that are more modern-day.
That's a really good point. Yeah. I had never thought of that, but you're right. They really kind of stuck to the— if by classic we mean old, they sort of stuck to that old time period.
And like we said, in 2007, the network debuted its first drama series, a period piece, like we just mentioned, about a Madison Avenue advertising executive and his crew, and it became the water cooler show of the day. The show won 16 Emmys, stars John Hamm, Elizabeth Moss, and many others. This was a big hit.
Oh, this was. And this is still, when you think of the five greatest television shows, Mad Men is probably going to be on there. I mean, and it, as is another AMC show. It was so beautifully put together. They were paying attention to the 60s period piece, right down to the foundation garments they put on the female characters. This really put AMC on the map as a provider of original content.
And it's drama, but not high drama. I mean, there would be periods where you'd be watching a show and you would say to yourself, I wish something would happen. You're pretty much going through Draper's life or some of the other storylines, and you don't have big murders. You don't have just the really high drama that comes with other shows. This is, you know, sort of true to life stuff. The show, I got to tell you, one of my favorite things about watching this show was just pure nostalgia and wishing I had some of that stuff. Now, you got a bar in your office. I mean, you got people coming to your office and you're pouring scotches and whiskeys, that kind of stuff. The small details that they put into that show were amazing. Throwing garbage out of the car window as you're driving. Yeah. I mean, that's something that we used to do.
I think you're absolutely right. And that was, for me too, some of the fun about watching this is that 60s television never showed us what life was like in the 60s. It took 2008 to show a show that actually shows what the 60s were. And you're right, until the Please, Please Don't Be a Litter Bug campaign, I remember my brother and I, when we were done with a Burger King Coke thing, we'd open the window and we'd toss it out. Now, we learned better and then we became vigilant against that. But all of that stuff, you realize what careless lives we were leading back then.
I was always struck watching this show, the amount of attention to detail that they had, because I remember this stuff even as a child. And, you know, kids would just get in the car. There was no seatbelt. Those kinds of details just really made the show that much more special.
You're right, too, about not only a lot of times where there's not a lot of drama happening, there was a lot of great comedy, too.
Yeah.
You could have put a laugh track after some of the lines on there, and it would have been in place. My favorite comic moment, though, when they brought the lawnmower up to the office and the guy gets...
And don't get me wrong, there was some pretty good drama. You had one of the staff members hang themselves in the office.
Oh, yes, there was some.
Obviously, rough divorce for Don Draper, who couldn't seem to keep his you-know-what in his pants, a ladies' man. Really good stuff. Was happy to have watched it. And now I think I've talked myself into going back and binging on it.
Yeah, no, I feel like getting up right now and going to watch it. Were you okay with the ending? I really liked that ending.
I did. At first, I thought it was going to be a little hokey, but the fact that they tied him to a major campaign that we all know.
But now that would have meant nothing to a viewer who, to me, I really loved that campaign. I bought the single of that song that came out on 45 record. But if I would have been 25 years old watching that, I would have had no idea what had just happened.
Exactly. But in our eyes, it sort of legitimized him as a character, as a real-life Madison Avenue character, because you could tie him to a campaign that was wildly popular. That show was followed shortly by Breaking Bad, which starred Bryan Cranston. And it was another 16 Emmy winner. This is AMC putting out programming that is killing it in the Emmy Awards.
Yeah, and this is the AMC that not that long ago had been showing cut, commercially interrupted movies about giant octopus and stuff like that. I did not see AMC coming with this kind of stuff. Two in a row. And if you say the big four in dramas are The Wire, Sopranos, Breaking Bad, and Mad Men, AMC has two of them, done within a year of each other. And that program, of course, couldn't be more different than Mad Men, but almost made you forget Mad Men. Within two episodes, you'd fallen in love with something new.
It did. Now, that was a bit more high drama and thriller, but the show, we spoke about this show, I think, in an Invitation to Binge on a previous episode, but just fantastic programming, again, killing it in the Emmy Awards. In 2010, things get a little bit out of hand with the zombie apocalypse. We have Walking Dead and Rick Grimes.
I am doing something. I'm keeping this group together, alive. I've been doing that all along, no matter what. I didn't ask for this. You saw what he was like. How he pushed me. How he compromised us. How he threatened us. He staged the whole Randall thing. Led me out to put a bullet in my back. He gave me no choice. He was my friend, but he came after me. My hands are clean.
Our hero Rick Grimes and his merry band of survivors struggle to adapt to a post-apocalyptic world where humanity is challenged on a daily basis. While Mad Men and Breaking Bad raked up all the awards, The Walking Dead became one of the highest-rated cable TV shows ever, with a couple of its season premieres breaking ratings records. It was a monster show. I mean, it's still running. I shouldn't say it was, but in the ratings, this show was getting it done.
And we have to remember, this is a cable show. Highest-rated series in cable history in 3-6, in its third season through sixth season, highest-rated series for 18 to 49-year-olds, which is the valuable audience. After the first season, a lot of shows have their, you get a sense of where they're going to go. This had ratings that were so much higher than whatever was in second place, and not just in its ratings, its class of its own in some other more disturbing ways as well.
I got to say, as popular as the show is and was at that time, you would think everyone is watching it. But it's one of those shows I could never convince anyone to watch. A lot of people say, oh, I don't like horror movies or I don't like horror shows. And it really is not a horror show to me. There is some horror. There are zombies, but the zombies are not that's not the main focus of the show. They're a backdrop. It's about human survival.
Yeah, if people don't like horror shows, meaning they don't like violence and blood, well, then maybe they should stay away from it. But you're right. I think people that have never seen Walking Dead just think of it as, you know, Night of the Living Dead, a bunch of zombies walking with their skin hanging out. And it is all kinds of other things. You're right. And sometimes that show gets very sophisticated, and sometimes it gets very disturbing. That coming back for the baseball bat with the barbed wire mm-hmm. thing, that was unrelenting. It just didn't stop.
One of the striking things about this program is watching our group. So there is a group of survivors, again led by Rick Grimes, who are the sort of heroes. But you watch them approach this line, come right up to the line where you cross over from being good to being bad. I mean, to really portraying violence and perpetrating violence in order to survive. So at the beginning, they're fighting off violence as it comes their way.
You know, that's interesting.
But you watch them almost become predators.
Yeah.
And that challenges the sort of hero view that you have of this group.
You all of a sudden pointed out to me that this actually is the perfect follow-up to Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad essentially is about a guy who finds himself in circumstances that he has to do things that he normally wouldn't. But the difference is, in Breaking Bad, Walter White breaks bad in episode one, and he's bad for the rest of it. Whereas, you're right, in Walking Dead, they continue to be breaking bad. They never quite completely go over. I'm going to have to rethink that now that you've pointed that out.
AMC continues to invest in original content with Walking Dead spinoff Fear the Walking Dead, Into the Badlands, which is a nice show about karate in a post-apocalyptic world, The Killing, Hell on Wheels, Breaking Bad spinoff Better Call Saul, which we spoke about in an episode, early days of the tech movement with Halt and Catch Fire, another good show that's more sci-fi oriented, Humans, which mm-hmm. is about androids living among us, and unscripted shows like Comic Book Men and Talking Bad and Talking Dead with Chris Hardwick that has a talk show. They started this with Breaking Bad, and now they do it with The Walking Dead, where he comes on and engages the audience and has stars from the show on to talk about what just happened in that episode. That's pretty interesting content programming.
It's like a college seminar sometime. It's the equivalent of what used to be on the DVD extras. Now nobody's watching DVDs, so they're actually making those programs themselves. It occurred to me, it was also AMC, I believe, that did what the New York Times called the meanest show ever made, called Film Fakers. And they would have these people pretending to be filmmakers, and they'd get these actors to audition and everything, and then they'd find out that it wasn't true. So for every Mad Men, there's a Film Fakers.
And when we come back, we'll have our invitation to binge. You're listening to Pop Life. Since we're talking AMC, it makes sense to invite you to sample The Walking Dead, the show that brought the term zombie apocalypse into the American lexicon. Adapted from the comic book of the same name, the show is known for its well-developed villains like the Governor, Gareth and the crew of Terminus, who were cannibalizing people, and of course, the most recent boss of bad, Negan.
I don't think you get it yet. So I'm going to break it down for you. You have three choices. One, you wind up on the spike and you work for me as a dead man. Two, you get out of your cell, you work for points, but you're going to wish you were dead. Or three, you work for me, you get yourself a brand new pair of shoes, and you live like a king. Choice seems pretty obvious. You should know. There is no door number four.
And that's all before he bashes people's heads in with a bat. You know, he's not a scary character until he starts wielding the bat. He's actually, the writing for this character is extremely funny, and he's extremely charming, which makes him all the more scary.
All the more spooky. Yeah, I agree with you entirely.
It's a great show. If you haven't seen the very first episode, and if you can imagine waking up in the hospital after having been in a coma, and the world has now ended and covered in zombies. I mean, you can only imagine what that's like and where this show can go. You know, it fits more in with the dystopian genre than it does horror for me. I know it has zombies and it's got some evil stuff in it, but it is more of a dystopian future, immediate future kind of show. But I don't know of any other series that has as great a set of villains than The Walking Dead.
No, it's got an army of them.
It does. You have the governor, who was sort of a charming individual, but just twisted and evil, and it slowly bubbled to the surface. And then you have someone like Negan, who is extremely funny and charming, but deadly with a baseball bat. You had a community of people trapping individuals and living off of them by eating them. The set of villains in this show is just amazing, and it keeps you on edge. It's thrilling television, and I invite anyone who is into that kind of TV making to check it out. Now, what do you have?
I'm going to choose another AMC show. However, this is one that doesn't get nearly the attention for good reason. It's no Mad Men. It's no Breaking Bad. It's no Walking Dead. But it went 5 seasons, over 50 episodes, and it does a lot of interesting things. It's called Hell on Wheels.
You ready? What you mean I'm ready? I can't even hit the dang tree.
Well, I'm just going to have to get in close, Sam.
I'm going to get up close without getting shot.
Whoever you're shooting at is going to be just as scared as you are. You take your time. Don't lose your head. Count your rounds as you fire. If you're calm, you count their rounds too. Trick is making sure the other man has to reload before you do.
What are you smiling at?
You imped.
Well, the title sounds like a motorcycle drama, but the clip, of course, reveals that it isn't. This starts in 1865, right after Abraham Lincoln is assassinated, and ends with the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad across the United States.
And again, they're keeping with the, or AMC is keeping with its period piece production.
Exactly.
With this one, it's a Western.
Yeah, a Western in the 19th century. The whole thing is really about the completion of this railroad, but a lot of other stuff happens. We see all of the tensions that come right after the Civil War, and there were plenty of them. But it's also, as you say, a Western. When they get out to where they finally drive the Golden Spike in Promontory Point, Utah, that was still the Wild West in that area. It's kind of a slow show at times. It's kind of complicated. They follow a number of characters, and you almost forget what's going on with the others. It's a more challenging program than the ones we've been talking about that have done much better in the ratings for AMC. But after its first season, it was second only to Walking Dead on AMC's lineup.
Oh, wow.
Now, by being second to Walking Dead means a pretty distant second, but it was still second. It averaged throughout the run of its first couple of seasons about 3 million a week. Not bad.
So the context of this is it's the Chronicles of the Union Pacific Railroad and the laborers and folks that sort of move around in these mobile encampments that follow the production
right.
and building of the railroad, right?
And it's following both sides because the Union Pacific was coming from one side and the Central Pacific, I think, was coming from the other. And then there was this big competition as to who would get how far first. And you do learn a little bit about that, but you don't have to be into railroads to watch watch this because it's about a lot of other things. There was some complaints in the beginning that they were showing all this stuff going on without any prominence or without any portrayal of Chinese laborers, of course, which there were a lot that built those railroads. As we get to later seasons, from the side that's coming from the West, we see a lot more of.
So they start taking the viewers' feedback and
I think probably that's what happened, because I think we had them on both sides, but I'm not a railroad historian.
Thanks for listening to Pop Life. It's a production of WAER Public Media with supervision by Kevin Kloss. Leave a comment for today's show at the Pop Life WAER Facebook page and follow the page for show updates. And if you want more Pop Life, listen on demand at WAER.org or subscribe to the podcast for automatic delivery of new shows. I'm Joe Lee, and on behalf of Bob Thompson, thanks for joining us.